Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The world has changed, and Microsoft Teams is there to help us stay connected. Teams is the safe and secure way to chat, meet, call, and collaborate. To learn more, visit Microsoft.com/Teams.
With Bruce Buffer. And now, it's time for the voice of mixed martial arts.
We are live!
It's Bruce Buffer.
Bruce Buffer.
From the shores of Malibu where the waves are pumping, to the Great Wall of China and back to the streets of Rio de Janeiro, where the UFC is coming. We are live. This is It's Time Radio, the show where we talk about what you think about but may be afraid to voice. Do not worry, we voice it for you. We talk about everything on It's Time: politics, film, TV, sex, drugs, rock and roll, and UFC. Let's see what we're going to talk about today. I'm here with my co-host, TJ DeSantis. We've both been traveling. I've been traveling. I'm home for 2 days. You're home for however many days, TJ. How the hell are you?
I'm good. I haven't traveled yet. I will travel moments from now, but it begins a crazy month. I'm going to Florida today. I come home and then I turn around and go back to Florida. I'm leaving today for work. Go back for a little vacation in Disney World, and then before I know it, I've got Combat Jiu-Jitsu Worlds, which is here in town, and then I got to head out to where am I going? Invicta in Kansas City. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Sounds fun. I had a crazy week. I've been home 2 days in the last 10 days and all loving it. I was in Fort Lauderdale, of course.
Right.
Went into Vegas and did that amazing event the UFC put on, giving away up to 15 dream wishes to children from that are part of the Make-A-Wish Foundation. I can't say enough about the Make-A-Wish Foundation. I can't say enough about the UFC, Dana White, and everybody and what they did for these young kids. And I thank them for allowing me to be a host of it. It was a very emotional, humbling, wonderful, wonderful event that I will never forget, looking in these beautiful children's eyes as I announced their dream wishes. TJ, most of the young kids wanted to go to Disneyland and Disney World. There were a couple of kids there that were 16 years old, give or take a year, and they chose Paris. One chose Paris and Rome, and the UFC, no matter what the wish, they granted it. Their families are going to Paris and Rome. Their families are going to Disneyland. But most of all, these kids, these beautiful children, were happy. And all the employees from the UFC turned out for this event. It was wonderfully covered by the news to give Make-A-Wish some good PR and press for all the wonderful things they do. And it was very, very wonderful for me to be part of this event. I just loved it.
That's great.
Yeah. Then I stayed in town. I stayed in for a day. I filmed the finale of a very popular TV show. I'm not allowed to give out the information yet because it's going to be a surprise. And I came home for 1 day. Went to Ottawa, Canada. Always love going to Canada. The Canadian fans are absolutely fantastic. I can't say enough about them. We had an excellent show. Great main event. You can't say enough about Cowboy Cerrone and Ally Aquinta. When I say a term, a Pier 6 brawl, what that means, folks, is it's whether it's in the back of a bar, the back of a loading dock, or what we call a Pier 6 brawl, that's where a street fight and they just go for it. And this truly was a test of heart, a test of will, a test of skill from two awesome, proven octagon warriors. What a fight.
We learned so much, and I can't remember who said it. But someone said it, and it's cliche to say it, but there are times when it really is true. Even Ally Aquinta, even though he lost, four rounds to one, and maybe it was even, 10-8 in that time, he didn't really lose in this fight because he showed the heart of a freaking warrior. Like, so many people, Buff, would have just stopped coming forward. He never did. And then Donald Cerrone, what do you say about this man? Like, you know, he's the former, you know, wild cowboy kid who, you know, was doing jet skis and just chasing that adrenaline high any way he can. And now he's got a son. He named his kid Danger, which I absolutely love. But Donald Cerrone now, you know, Donald Daddy Cerrone, still doing things like the cowboy that we know he is, and is able to take out a hungry up-and-comer like Al Iaquinta. I mean, I don't know what is next for Donald Cerrone. Maybe it's a fight with Conor McGregor. Maybe it's a showdown with Khabib Nurmagomedov. But I will tell you one thing. I'm willing to pay my $54.99 to watch Donald Cerrone fight any day. And this guy is still, you know, penning a Hall of Fame career and doing it at the highest level.
Absolutely. And I can't really add anything to what you just said because you said it so perfectly. I just want to say, if you're a UFC fan, who does not like to watch Donald Cerrone fight? Who doesn't?
People that don't like fights.
Yeah, there you go. That's pretty much it. So congratulations, Donald. Congratulations, Al, too. I mean, the heart of a lion, both of them.
Oh, I have a hard time believing that Al Iaquinta won't make his way to a title fight again in his career because, again, like, you can't teach heart. You know what I mean? You can teach all the other skills, and trust me, Ray Longo and Sarah have imparted a lot of skills upon this young man in Raging Al, but you can't teach heart, and Iaquinta has as much heart as some entire divisions.
You know how I call Kelvin Gastelum the Roberto Duran of our sport?
Yep.
I'm calling Al Iaquinta the Jake LaMotta of our sport.
I like it. I respect it. It's hard to argue. And those are titles you don't throw around willy-nilly.
No,
so,
not at all.
Al,
not
if you're listening, you know, fist bump to you, sir. You deserve that title.
Big time. Big time. Okay. All the other fights off that weekend, last weekend, at the Air Center were awesome. You know, everything was good. Everybody brought their A game. Another excellent show. Now, that's the past. Here's the future. Rio de Janeiro, Jessica Andrade, Rose Namajunas. Hello, world. Anderson Silva, Jared Cannonier, hello world, Jose Aldo,
yeah.
Alexander Volkanovski,
right?
Hello world, Francisco Trinaldo, Diego Ferreira, hello world,
stop,
Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira, Ryan Spann, hello world.
Oh my God, seriously, what a great card, worth every penny. If you're not on the ESPN Plus app, fix that because you need to watch this card. It's a sneaky good card. There's a lot of, like, I feel like every year I say this, but May is so busy, it's MMA, and this card, I think, is a little bit under the radar. It's the numbered event, obviously. Rose Namajunas is a fantastic champion, taking on Jessica Andrade, who is more than a worthy competitor. And then you mentioned an undercard that, I mean, you know, fingers crossed nothing happens to the main event, but this is one of those events that would be fine if they lost the title fight at the top because there's just so many intriguing matchups.
All you got to do is move the Brazilian hero, Jose Aldo, to the main event. God forbid that ever happens.
Right.
And even, or Anderson Silva. No, you move Anderson Silva up and Jose right behind him, and you've still got an amazing pay-per-view, but let's not jinx it.
Right.
I cannot wait to see Rose, who is an underdog to Jessica Andrade in this fight.
Not often you see that. Not often you see the champion coming.
I was surprised by that. I don't bet fights, but my gosh, I think John Anik will be all over that. But they're just two great war. May the best woman win. You know, that's all I want to see. May the best woman win.
I don't know. I know she's the underdog, but in situations like this, your recent form sort of dictates your future. And this woman beat Joanna Jędrzejczyk twice, Buff. It's very hard to counter out.
Hello. Of course. I agree fully. So Rio de Janeiro, here we come. I'll be there Friday. Looking forward to the show. There's another big event that's happening on Friday surrounding the weigh-ins. Again, I'm part of it, but I can't talk about it until it happens. So there's some exciting things that are going to happen down in Rio. Looking forward to it. I missed, I think, the last two shows. Not that I did not want to go. I was not scheduled for them. I can't wait to see my beloved UFC fans in Rio de Janeiro. Love you all. I'm coming. Obrigado. Let's do this. All right, now, TJ, we're going to do an archive show today because, again, I've got to go hop on a plane. I got a lot of things to do. It is an archive show that I think everybody will enjoy. But before we get to that and explain that, I have to talk about one news story. TJ, are you a Game of Thrones fan?
I've never seen it. Not episode one. Never.
Okay. Well, here's what happened. As you know, Game of Thrones is considered by many to be the greatest TV show ever. ever made, right? Millions of dollars, huge promotion, huge production, set back in a time in history when there was no McDonald's and there was no Starbucks. Now, there is a thing on set called continuity person. With the continuity person, however they are titled today, because this is a title that's been around for many, many decades, actually, is the important job of them is so that when they stop a scene and start a scene, that continuity is there. Such
right.
as...
Right, like if a windshield is broken and they...
Right.
You don't want that windshield to reappear not broken, which I believe is one of like the biggest flaws in the movie Twister. Like this, this truck gets its windshield smashed and then... The second time you see it, its windshield is completely fine.
Right. And that's what happens along with things like if it's a Viking movie or a cowboy and Indian movie or a gladiator movie, and you notice in crowds are running and you see wristwatches
right.
on the actor's
yeah.
on the actor's hand.
Yeah.
Here's what happened, TJ. A scene made the final cut that was picked up, of course, immediately. This is the first time in five seasons. They're having a serious scene inside a room in the castle, shall we say. On the table is a Starbucks cup of coffee.
Oh, no. How did that? Oh, my God.
A Starbucks cup of coffee, TJ. Right on the table. Everybody picked up on it. TMZ, of course, caught it. There's only two episodes left. We're finding out who's going to get killed inside the show. But I think whoever left the Starbucks cup is going to be the first fatality on this TV show.
No kidding.
And I'm sorry to laugh because the producers are great people. I've met them. They just do an amazing job. But even they got a painful guffaw out of this one, I'm sure. It's just amazing how with everybody and all the eyes on TV and the editing room and everything, that could make it. That was my little news story for today.
Yeah, no, it's funny, but, I mean, these things happen, you know? Like, it's human error.
Well, goes to show you, Starbucks has really been working a long time on their brand.
No kidding. I mean, back to medieval times, apparently.
Yeah, it wasn't even trademarked back then because they didn't have attorneys. All right, the show coming up is a show that both TJ and I really had a great time. Originally was filmed in studio for video. The very, very, very funny actors. I mean, comedian Nick Swartzen, a friend of the show. You've seen him in all the Adam Sandler movies. Simon Rex, you've seen him in multiple films. The Scary Movie series. Great guys, great personalities, tons of fun. We laughed our heads off before, after, and during the show. I want you all to enjoy it. I'm off to Brazil. TJ's off to do his things. Let's leave you with one of our favorite comedic, entertaining episodes of all time, and it's time.
We have two very special guests. My friend from the UFC, my friend from film, a man who's an extremely gifted comedian, actor, and entertainer. We have Nick Swartzen. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Nick. And his partner in crime, Simon Rex. You all know Simon from the Scary Movie and many other things, but now you're going to know Simon and Nick better than ever. Because we're going to talk about their new show on Comedy Central, Typical Rick. Hey, guys, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, Bruce, love you, dude.
Love you too, brother. Thanks really for coming on. But the big news here is your show on Comedy Central, Typical Rick. I'm so happy to hear you've made this foray again into TV, but this is going to be more of a star vehicle for you. How's it going? How's everything happening? Tell us about the show.
Show's amazing. I created it. I was drunk at a movie theater and me and our director, Nick Goosen, who directed Grandma's Boy. I just thought of this idea for me and Simon, cause I love Simon. He's one of my best friends and he's super talented. So it essentially just came, I was like, wanted to think of a show that was like simple and not too complicated. So it's basically two guys from Iowa that moved to Hollywood. And I play a guy that wants to be a dramatic actor, like the next Daniel Day-Lewis. And I take myself very seriously. And then Simon's character, Rick, tags along and is a fucking train wreck. And so he's like loose cannon, but like everybody gravitates towards him. So he gets all the attention when I'm like busting my ass to like audition and do shit. So it's like an Odd Couple meets Entourage, essentially.
Yeah. That sounds kind of like Lethal Weapon meets Entourage.
It is a little Lethal Weapon.
I'm Danny Glover. I remember Nick hits me up and he says we were comparing stories about our friends from back home. He's from Minnesota, I'm from the Bay Area, and whenever our friends come into town in LA, there's always that one dude who fucks everything up. And we were sharing horror stories about our friends that have come, and he's like, that's a great idea for a show.
Yeah.
The plus like the, one from hell.
Yeah, the plus one from hell is basically how it started. Just a guy that just comes in like a wrecking ball, like Simon's character, like, is just doing blow and just, like, going to just parties and being insane. So...
Did you have to do a lot of research for this role, Simon?
A lifetime of real research led to...
We did coke for 40 years to prepare for this part.
I thought I was going to say 40 hours to write the script. But anyway, you know, with the show like this, I got to assume that you're going to have, you know, guest appearances and stuff like that on. So in the first season, who did you have on the show?
This first season, we had Chris D'Elia, who was amazing. He was awesome. And then we didn't have a lot of cameos in the first season, but the second season, it's pretty stacked. We have great people. I don't know if I want to spoil it, but...
No, don't spoil it. Make us watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But check it out. It's streaming on Comedy Central, and you can also watch it on YouTube, on the Comedy Central's YouTube page.
I've got a big poker tournament to play at the World Poker Tour, and there's a lot of downtime sometimes at the table, so I'm going to be on my iPhone today.
Yeah, check it out.
I'll be laughing at the table, and they're wondering what the hell I'm laughing at.
While you're making millions.
I'm going to try.
You know what I did one time? You're talking about poker. This is one of the only times. I'm not a big poker guy, but I was at, I think it was Commerce. And I went, and I was playing poker, and it was like, you know, late night. It was shit-faced. And I got a 2 and an 8. I was big blind. And I got a 2 and 8 offsuit. And I didn't, you know, nobody else, like... Nobody else challenged me, so I just, you know, I paid the, you know, whatever. I was big blind. And so, you know, I got to see the flop, and it was a 2 and an 8, and then, like, a jack.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, holy fuck. So I just nailed 2 pair, and ended up winning the hand. This guy went back and forth with me, and he had 2 jacks, and I had, a, you know, 2 pair. And I remember I stood up on the table. I've never done this ever. And he just goes, yeah, I got 2 jacks, motherfucker. And I just went, boom, and I threw down my 2 and my 8. And this guy wanted to fucking kill me. And I took the entire, this big pot. And then I had to, like, literally my buddy grabbed me and was like, we got to go. This guy's going to fucking kill you.
Yeah, it gets intense, man. That's the vibe at the table. I'm not really into gambling, but it's fucking gnarly. Like, I didn't know the rules, too. I had that happen once where I hit when I wasn't supposed to hit. I guess there's just simple etiquette at the poker table. And I fucked the whole rest of the round up for everybody. And I was about to get my ass beat.
Dude, the worst is
it's crazy.
Fucking blackjack. I was just doing shows in Fort Lauderdale, and I was staying at the Hard Rock. And me and my buddy, who opened for me, we were playing blackjack, and he was like, you know, he would have like 14, and, you know, you should stay, and he would hit. And the table, he was losing everybody money. People were freaking out.
What seat at the blackjack table was sitting in? Was it like out of the 5 or 6 seats, was he first base or third base at the end? Was he in the middle?
He was first base.
Yeah, that's going to screw it up for everybody.
Screwed it up for everybody. Yeah. People wanted to fucking kill this guy. I was screaming at him. I'm like, what are you doing? He would have fucking 16 and take a hit.
But, you know, it's okay to hit 14 into a 10, not into a 4, 5, or 6, which are the dealer's bus cards.
Yeah, no, when the dealer would have like a 6, you know, my buddy would have like, it was just a fucking disaster.
You mix alcohol and money, it gets a little aggressive.
Well, it depends how much alcohol and how much money you're playing with.
Totally.
And you just have to know etiquette, you know, gambling and shit like that. You can't just be loose cannon and go fucking rogue one.
That's when you got to take the Velcro on your ass, separate it from the seat, get up and walk away.
Yeah.
Got to find another table to put your chips down. Speaking of gambling, I'm going to Commerce today, the place that you played at for the World Poker Tour. But in our background, I was mentioning earlier, there's a 6 degrees of separation because in all the things you've done, you know, from Reno 911, I remember I went to the premiere of Benchwarmers. You were in the movie and worked with my brother Michael Buffer on You Don't Mess with the Zohan.
Yeah.
And how many Adam Sandler movies have you done?
706.
Fucking God. I would say, I mean, with Happy Madison, I'd say 15 maybe.
Yeah, that's the one thing I like so many things about Adam. He's such a good guy. I remember after the movie, my brother ran into him at a restaurant called Paponi's here in LA, and he said hi, and then an hour and a half later he left, and Michael left, and he asked for the check, and they said no, Adam took care of it.
Adam's
he's that kind of guy.
No, he's a good dude.
He's amazing. Like he'll do shit where it's like he'll call me up like, what are you doing for the Super Bowl? I'm like, nothing. He goes, I got a plane, let's go to Vegas. I'm like, okay. I'm like, who's going? He's like, There's like 25 of us. Yep. So he would just fucking bring like 25 people to Vegas and fucking pay for everything. Pay for all of our rooms, pay for every meal. I mean, like, you know, he's a great guy. Just super generous and like really fun. And we have a tour coming up. Me, Sandler, Spade, and Schneider. That starts in April, so we'll be doing a bunch of dates. You can look at my Instagram at Real Nick Swartz, and all the dates are posted.
Tell me how much fun that's going to be with that crew. That's just like I could just imagine having dinner with you guys every night. That would just be hilarious.
It's super fun. It's just we're so close that, like, I mean, you know, obviously we know David Spade. Yeah. David's one of my best friends. You know, they're like brothers to me. So it's funny because it's just, you know, like. We do have an amazing time. Like, we're always laughing, but we still, like, fight.
Yeah.
Like, brothers. Like, we still, like, get mad at each other. And, like, are like, hey, man, fuck you. No, fuck you. Like, there's still, like, that element to it.
Yeah, but that high school, college mentality is never going to go away. That's what keeps you brothers. I'll tell you a real funny, not funny, but a cool story about Adam. He came to the UFC. I don't know if you were there with him that night. And I walked up to him, you know, to say hi and everything. And I said, Adam, I gotta ask you, you know, you always have these icons. You have a tendency to have these icons in your movies, like Bob Barker and David Hasselhoff.
Right.
I said, why don't you think about putting my brother Michael, you know, Michael's manager. So right. Obviously I'm always working. But
oh, that's cool.
I said, why don't you put Michael Buffer in one of your movies? He goes, oh, that's a good idea. And that was it.
And he puts him in the movie.
2 weeks later, I get a phone call. You don't mess with the Zohan. It wasn't come try out because we want Michael to co-star in the movie as the guy he co-starred in. Can he come in and do a read, you know, with the crew? And that was it. Two weeks after I said that to him.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's insane.
I've never seen anything like it. I mean, the family vibe that he said, the few times I've been on set to visit Nick or whatever, it's just he created a really home environment at work. Everyone's just seems really happy. They've been there forever and he's taking care of everyone.
But he works on the fly like that. Like I did that movie, Just Go With It, with me and him and Jennifer Aniston. And I remember Sandler called me. I was at a fucking restaurant. And he goes, hey, what's up, man? What are you doing? I go, I'm eating. What's going on? He goes, can you do a German accent? I go, maybe like this. I don't know. It took like this. And he goes, yep, good. And then I go, okay, what the fuck? He goes, I'll call you later. And then a week later, he goes, yeah, we're doing this movie. And he's like, I got you, like, the co-lead with me and Jennifer Aniston. And
really?
It was just, yeah, and I played, like, a guy who pretended to be German and shit, but it was just that fast. He just called me really quick. Hey, can you do the voice? Okay. Yep, perfect.
Well, you know, there's certain directors and producers like Adam, and one of the guys that's similar to him but does more serious films is Clint Eastwood. When I say that, it's because if you look at all of Clint Eastwood's films, he uses the same crew, a lot of the same actors. Does an incredible job every time he does a movie.
Yeah,
he's guaranteed, like Adam, he knows who has to come in. You guys are actors. You can play different roles. Doesn't matter if you're in the last film or not. That's loyalty, that's friendship, and that's good business, in my opinion.
Yeah for sure. Absolutely. But it's also everybody delivers, too. So it's not like he's not just handing out shit where it doesn't work. You know what I mean? Like, he has a sixth sense where, you know, like, I produce a lot of his movies, too, and he'll be like, what about so-and-so for this role? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. That seems kind of weird. And then the person will just come in and fucking nail it. And he'll be like, just somebody totally random.
So when you're filming, how many episodes does Comedy Central pick up on typical Rick?
Six.
So you do six, and then how does the seasons work on that? In other words, you do the six, it runs, are there 2 seasons a year, 3 seasons a year?
It's like Netflix where it just comes out at once and you could watch all of them. They're only about 7 minutes in length each episode. So you're going to get a 42-minute season. You know, you can
really,
binge,
seven?
You could binge watch.
No, this season's like 10 to 12.
Oh, this one will be longer. Okay. But the first season, I'd say average 7-8 minutes, something like that.
Yeah.
They're quick and just leaves you wanting more and you could just watch, fly through them really quick.
Yeah, these are like really easy.
Oh, this is going to be great to watch today when I'm playing.
You can pop right through it.
So, for our audience, because we talk a lot on the show about the success factor, what it takes to be an entrepreneur, which obviously you guys are creating the show. I mean, no doubt about it. The moment you thought about the concept for the show to take it to sell it, take me through calendar-wise. You did it when this, how long did it take to get here to when you were filming?
God, I would say from pitch to execution, it was probably
8 months.
8 months, yeah.
About that.
That's still pretty quick.
Yeah, that's pretty quick.
Yeah.
Well, he's like a mini Sandler. He did the same thing. He just made it happen. He just has the, you know, ability and the connections to think of an idea and make it happen and just put me in it. And I was just stoked that he thought of me because we've only shot a few things together, nothing on this scale before. So it's fun. And our friend Nick Goosen, who's directing it, has done so much stuff with us. We always do YouTube videos. And so it's just same thing, that little family vibe. We all know each other. We all fight like brothers and get along and make fun of each other and all that shit.
But yeah, I walked into Comedy Central and they bought it in the room and then I just started writing it.
And then when you're producing Adam Sandler's films, I mean, I know what it takes to be a producer, but how much work is involved in that when you're producing one of his films? What is your
It's a lot. I mean, it depends upon the, you know, it's a lot. I mean, it's you're on set every second. So it's 12 to 13 hour days and it's just, you know, I'm a creative producer. So like I'm doing all the punch up. So I'm like helping with the, you know, making the scenes better and making everything tighter and, you know, giving Adam notes and giving him, you know what I mean, other actors too. And, you know, just telling people like, oh no, try it this way, do it this way. Oh, Adam, don't forget this. Oh yeah, you know what I mean? Like that type of thing. But it's like, it's nonstop.
Right.
It's intense.
Well, I mean, your career's nonstop when you think about it. I mean, I work in my sports and entertainment career, I base everything on passion. I try to throw it all on the floor, whether I'm announcing or I'm doing a TV show or a movie. I like to have fun and do what I do. You guys, the four of you, Adam has had tremendous success as an actor, as a producer. You've had what I consider tremendous success as an actor and, of course, as you're talking about, as a producer. Yet all you guys, and David Spade and Rob Schneider, and all you guys are willing to go out on the road and get dirty again like you did in the early years as you continue to enjoy. Is this because of the passion you have for your career? Is it a combination of the passion mixed with, I need to do this to stay sharp and to be raw? I mean, what is the basic
money?
There we go. Came out.
Money. Lot of money.
A lot of money.
No, I've been a stand-up for 21 years, and it's, you know, at the core root of myself, like, that's who I am. You know what I mean? My stand-up is who I am. And so my fan base is so loyal and awesome. So, you know, but it's exhausting. Like, I'm 40 years old now. So, you know, when you run around the country at 23 years old, it's way different. So now, you know, the older you get, like, I tour with Sandler, and then I tour on my own, and then I shoot this show, and then I start another movie in the summer. And, you know, it gets exhausting. It's it does catch up to you. I've talked to other comics. And, like, the older we get, the more we talk about, like, just getting on multiple planes and going through baggage claim and going for, like, you
That's
know.
That's the tough part. People ask me what's the hardest part. I tell them the travel.
Yeah,
the travel, and it's just, like, the, you know, Simon knows, too. He tours his dirt nasty, and, you know, it's just, like, the different time zones and the altitudes, and it just, like, it's so fucking intense. It's just, like, really, like, I just remember touring. Like, I toured for, like, 3 months straight. And I remember I had no idea where the fuck I was at certain points.
Well, still get that.
There was a movie before called If It's Tuesday, This Must Be Belgium. And that's what I say to myself, because sometimes I wake up in a hotel room and I'm like, where the F am I?
Yeah. You know?
I mean, it's happened. I'm going to be 60 in May. And I notice that even that gets a little more as I get older. But I just love what I do so much, so I get through it. And we celebrate something together. You're 21 years in comedy.
Yeah.
Last week I was 21 years in the Octagon.
No way.
Yeah, my 21-year anniversary.
Fuck yeah.
Been that long. That's crazy.
Congrats,
crazy.
Buddy.
Yeah, congrats.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Dirt Nasty.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about this.
Yeah, it's an alter ego rap character that I created, and it ends up being a comedy music show, kind of like what Sandler does. He'll do a song and do, you know, some jokes, and it's definitely very fun vibe that I bring out. I always tell people, you don't have to like my music, just come to the show because you'll have a good time.
Right.
You know, I bring people from the audience on stage. I do a lot of improvising, and just it's
hilarious.
It's fun. It's just fun. I don't take myself too seriously. I'm not trying to. All my songs are definitely comedic based, so it ends up becoming a fun night. You know, it's not. I bring out a fun crowd of degenerates who I love.
That's honest.
Yeah,
it's
true.
There's some loose cannons that come out.
I just did Portland the other night, which for some reason the Pacific Northwest is just where I sell out shows back to back and just do really well. And man, they just come out by the hundreds and are just wasted and just.
It's Portland, baby. There's herb in the air.
Man,
God, I have Portland coming up soon.
It's a fun city.
But yeah, my fan base too. It's like, Last time I toured, I had to go on Twitter and I had to tell people, like, chill out, because people would come and, like, they'd get so fucking wild and shit faced.
You know,
and,
that's
like,
because of you, though. They're wanting to be you. They're wanting to get into character.
But
they
think, like, I don't party that hard. Like, I don't, like, you know, I drink, but I drink casually and, like, I don't do any drugs. And but people think that it's like this crazy fuck tornado show, and, like, there was fist fights. People were vomiting. I mean, it gets, like, crazy. Like,
it's nuts.
And the best was, you know, I would do theaters, but then I would do performance art centers. So I was doing places where they would have, like, The Lion King and, like, Wicked and, like, these musicals. And then my show would come in, and these, like, ushers were just, like, old ladies that, like, weren't ready for my fucking tornado fans coming in and just raging. And I remember my tour manager was just like, yeah, like, three people puked in the bathroom. Like, somebody fucking fell down the stairs. There was a fist fight. It was just like...
Well, you have a rider in your contract, right? You don't have to break up fist fights and you don't have to clean up the toilets. Yeah. So you're okay.
Yeah, I'm good. But it was just like, oh my God.
It's like we created that for ourselves. Like, you had I think one of your albums was called Party Time or something.
It
was just
called
opening the door for the party.
I opened the big door.
Yeah, you did.
We both did.
Which is fine. It's fun. But like you said, when you get older in your 40s, like, it's enough to be traveling and sleeping in hotels and night in and night out, they're all waiting for you to come party with you. Like, I got to run out the back door. I don't know about you, but I have to avoid the interaction with my fans because they have been waiting for me for 6 months to party with them, and they don't understand that I got to go do four more shows the next four nights in a row, and it's just physically not possible.
I leave right away, and it's like I don't drink when I work. Whenever I'm filming or anything, like I just did shows in Phoenix, and I would go out, like, to go eat, and I would have to have, like, security with me because people would fucking come up and, like, give me shots and stuff. And I'm like, I don't do shots anyway. And I was just like, no. And I remember one guy walked up to me with a shot of Jägermeister. And he goes, here, I got this for you. And I go, oh, man, I don't do shots. I'm not drinking right now. I'm sober. And he goes, this is the saddest day of my life. He goes, all I've ever wanted was to meet you and do a shot. And I'm like, I'm sorry, dude. And he was just like, this is horrifying.
You know, that's, a few comments on that after show. I mean, even in respect to what I do, I sometimes take the back ways to get around, and, you know, but I remember one thing I always remember is never forget where you came from, because I'm sure with, like, you guys too, you had experiences in your early career walking through the comedy shops or, you know, film sets or cities, whatever, and nobody said a word. It was like crickets.
Right.
And now they recognize you, and we all should be thankful for that, as I know you are.
No, it's a good problem to have.
But perception is reality with fans, but it's when they go against man law and they follow me in the bathroom or they're taking pictures of me or, you know, that's just wrong.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And you're going to get that if the amount of people that come out,
the amount of people,
a couple of guys that could fuck up the night for you.
It's just the way it is.
I mean, like, and I'm 100% appreciative, and I love my fans, and I'm so happy to be where I am. But it's funny because Sandler told me, he was like, when I was 26, I just started working with him, and we started filming Grandma's Boy, and Adam goes, do you want to be famous? And I said, yeah. I go, yeah, that'd be fucking awesome. And he goes, just so you know, once you are, you can never go back.
He's right.
And I was like, I didn't really understand it at the time. And he was like, yeah. He goes, you can't, like, once the train takes off, you're fucking on the train for the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
And it's a trip, dude. It's like, all the time, 24/7.
Well, especially when you're creating a fan base like you both are, I try to do myself, is create an organic fan base. You're not, it's happening naturally, and those are your fans forever.
Yeah, totally.
They're going to love what you do.
Yeah, and I'm a completely genuine, like, when I do my stand-up, and I'm very self-effacing, but I've cultivated an amazing fan base, but, yeah, it's just like, you know, it's getting better that I'm older because the crowd is getting older too. Like, 10 years ago, it was way more intense with, like, people partying and, like, ripping blow and shit. But, like, you know, now it's like people are, like, in their 40s like me. So it's like, it's a little bit, but it's a little easier.
But I do recommend not taking any drinks from anybody, because I've avoided being roofied twice.
Right.
And I only say that because one time I was suspicious of one. The other time, a friend of mine, a female, actually took the drink that was given to me and wound up going over the edge, and it was obvious that it was a roofie, and I've been in experience with that. I got to be really careful.
Take a drink from anybody.
Never take a drink from anybody public.
I've been roofied.
If they buy it for you and you're there with them and the bartender brings it in front of you, that's different.
Oh, yeah.
If they walk up to you, don't do it.
No, never.
It's like too short. This famous rapper told me, he said, you know, I'd never hang out with my fans because you're never going to win that one. As soon as they light up a joint or have a drink with you, then you're hooked in.
If you're, especially if a picture's taken, you're nailed.
Oh, well, nowadays with the cell phone cameras and everything, totally. But just as a general note, he's like, I make it a rule not to party with my fans because it's a lose-lose. You're not going to win that one. They're going to ask you for your phone number. They're going to ask you, you know, once you're nice and just show them a little bit, people are very aggressive.
Yeah, exactly. And then they start hitting you on Twitter like you're your best friend. And with all respect, we're not. We're acquaintances. We met. Sorry. I get, you know, like you guys have thousands, hundreds of thousands of fans. You can't answer every tweet out there.
No.
Right. Let me ask you a little thing about the business again. Adam, the blockbuster hits he's had, his last couple films have gone to Netflix. Some people might think that that's less. It's really not, because the whole Netflix and everything is becoming such a big industry in itself to release product on. So is the money and the financials in Netflix and the exposure similar to releasing a film in theaters? Is this a choice?
Yeah, I thought it was genius on his part, because I know, like, working with him so long in the studio system, you know, it was just so much anxiety for, like, the opening weekend and box office, and he would just get so stressed, and it was like doing press and talk shows and, you know, trying to get it out there so, you know, the movie opens, and, you know, it was just so much stress on him. And it was like the Netflix deal was so ahead of its time. And he was just like, you know, the movie's out there right away. He doesn't have to do a ton of press. And he has complete creative freedom. So, like, Netflix is amazing in the sense where, like, they don't inundate us with notes. They don't go like, well, I don't know, this is funny. Like, the studio system, it was just, like, fucking insane of just executives, like, just trying to justify their jobs and being like, yeah, I don't know. Does this scene work? I don't know if this works. And we were like, yeah, it fucking works.
Yeah, but
we've been doing comedy for 50 years between us.
In Hollywood, I've had this adage for years. They don't know what happens, what works until it works. And I'll give you an example. I've been on the show before. In the 60s, in the 50s, they made a bunch of space movies. In the 60s, they stopped making space movies. Then a film called Star Wars got released and did $1 billion in business. And suddenly every studio is like, hey, let's make a space movie.
Never heard of it. Is that a movie?
Yeah, never heard of it. Exactly. Hollywood, they think they know what works. They don't know what works until it works. And that's where people like you that want to take the leap, and you, Simon, you take the leap to make something happen and say, hey, now I'm a pioneer. Now I created something.
Right.
You know,
so. But it's funny. Like, I remember Mike Myers when he wrote Austin Powers, and he gave the script to the studio. And, you know, they were like, I don't understand. So you say, yeah, baby. And he was like, yeah, my character says, yeah, baby. And they're like, that's not that funny. And he goes, no, that's, you don't understand. It's like, yeah, babe. Like, it's a catchphrase, you know, and they like just didn't, and they tried to kill it. And that's what I heard. And fucking, it was like, that was his fucking catchphrase.
That's the age old thing, though. Is you get the suits who, want to be creative, and they're all operating out of fear because everyone's getting fired. So you get this weird battle between the suits creatively and the artists. And that's why Typical Rig's great, because they basically are like, here, just go make it, you know. And I, for the most part, they really did just let us do our thing.
Do you have 100% control?
I mean, pretty much. 99.
That's rare. I mean, and Nick, they just trust Nick at this point. So, like, do whatever you got to do. And just,
what about ratings? What if it gets a little explicit nudity wise, word wise, whatever? I mean, you guys look over the edge.
The thing about it being streaming is that we have a lot of freedom. So, like, that's one reason why I wanted to do it streaming and not on air, is that we can swear, we can fucking do anything.
Smoke weed.
We can smoke weed and fucking do blow and whatever the fuck. Like,
wait, for everybody listening, Nick does not do drugs. He's just acting.
The characters.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have full creative freedom. I mean, yeah, it's great. It's awesome.
That's awesome. Simon, let me ask you. What was it like to be famous pre-internet as opposed to being famous post-internet?
It's a different world. You know, I've been fortunate because I've somewhat reinvented myself over the years by staying on social media and looking at it like a job. And I'm working with Weed Maps right now, which is just this huge company.
Yeah, I'm familiar with them.
Yelp of Yelp for marijuana dispensaries. And, you know, all throughout the years, like I did Vine when it first came out and had like over 2 million followers on there. And people still come up to me like, you're the Vine guy. Like you got to do that stuff to just stay with the younger audience. It's just smart to be
stay relevant
because everyone's just on their phone all day at the end of the day. And, you know, so that's my job to do that. So I try to make it my job, like to post some funny comedy content or just to do something to just keep people entertained. And then the money sort of comes later. You just do it to do it. And it's fun to exercise that instrument and tool and just stay sharp. And it's really fun also because, like, if I think of an idea, I can literally shoot it, edit it, do it all myself and put it up. And it's such a quick turnaround. Compared to doing a movie or something, you really just get hundreds of thousands of people to have a laugh, and you're just doing it all yourself, and it just takes a little time, and it's such a quick fix.
Right.
I love it.
So, but it is exhausting, though. It's like I find myself on my phone just nonstop,
so
Instagramming, Facebooking, tweeting, just everything, and it's like...
It's exhausting.
It's exhausting, and I remember I lost my phone last year, and... I just didn't buy a new one for like a week. And like, so I was just like, I lost it and I was like, fuck, I need a new phone. And it was so nice not to have a phone.
Right?
It's like you're on vacation.
Yeah, it literally was. It was like, I was so relaxed and like not just a constantly
it's so
fucking texting and like.
It's a catch 22 curse, but you know, it's an operational necessity to today's business. Especially in entertainment and sports, you have to do it.
You got to do it.
Yeah. And also, whenever you get hired, when you get hired for a job, whether it's a studio or a Comedy Central, one of the first things they're going to look at is how much social media you guys have.
Yeah, make this work. That's a big factor.
And I'll be honest, like, I'll promote my own shows when I go on tour, and me just posting one Instagram post or a tweet will fill up the crowd a lot more than the local promoter could do. So it's become your job to do that because it does help. And then you make more money and more people have a good time.
Are you monetizing your social media at all?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit with Weed Maps and stuff like that.
Yeah. I think
in the past,
I did a commercial for Weed Maps. A little while ago. That's pretty interesting.
They're cool people. They're just good people.
Listen, that's the. It's not that it's the future, but it's like there's Wild Wild West days in industry. The internet became Wild Wild West. What I mean by that, there's so much room to make money.
Yeah.
You know, right. And now with the whole weed industry, whether you smoke it or not, and we promote the legalization of marijuana, and I'm big for it because of strictly for medicinal purposes that people need it for. It provides so much help to so many people, aside from the recreational side, which is your ability to do that whatever you want as an adult. I have no problem with any of that. I just think it should be legalized nationwide, state by state, equally, and be done. And it's going to happen at some point, just like the UFC eventually is going to get legalized in every state at some point. It was a 23-year trek to get there. If you're going to get in that industry now like you're doing, now's the time to get into it intelligently and prepare for when there's so much money to be made. You know, So much money.
Good Lord.
Speaking of money, are you guys during the Super Bowl? Were you for the Falcons or were you for the Pats?
I was rooting for the Falcons just for the underdog, but
I was rooting for the Falcons, but I mean, I'm a big Tom Brady fan, so like I was stoked, and I'm friends with Gronk, and so I was happy for them.
How painful was it for him to sit on the sidelines, watch that game, and not be in it? Jeez.
Yeah,
actually,
but I mean,
Atlanta
that
was favored, right? Atlanta was favored, so they weren't the underdog. I think Atlanta was favored.
The Pats were favored by three. Trust me, I had a major swing on this game. Everybody thought at my party I was losing, and then I came out, you know, with a huge win at the end. I had Agena, you know, I think I went up and down heartbeat about 50 million times.
What a game, though.
The greatest Super Bowl ever.
That really
It was unreal.
It actually wasn't the greatest Super Bowl ever. In many people's minds, it was one of the greatest sporting events ever.
That was crazy. Ever. Overtime, the whole thing, I mean, it was just unbelievable.
How about the halftime?
He passed Montana, I think, is the best.
Oh, there's no question, statistic-wise, no question.
Tom Brady's the best quarterback of all time.
Yeah.
He's a great guy, too. He's a role model. I mean, the guy's like... He goes home to Gisele Bundchen and makes $25 million or more than he does every year. Wow.
Yeah.
Talk about power.
I just want to watch them fuck. Just nonstop. I could just constantly watch
them. You think it would sell more than Paris's video, Simon?
Yeah, I'd be more interested in that one.
You know about his jersey, how it got stolen.
Yeah.
Now they say the jersey is worth $500,000. But ask yourself this question. Where the F do you sell that jersey?
Yeah.
And the guy that buys it, what can he do with that or she do with that jersey?
I'll buy it and fucking jerk off on it.
That's about your only choice. You better get $500,000 worth of baby batter out of that one.
Yeah. Jeez. Fuck.
All right, I'm going to go over a couple of interesting stories here, and then I know you guys got to go on to more riches and success. So basically, you guys heard of the Twinkie defense? There was a police officer in Florida years ago.
I have heard of that.
And he claimed that the reason he did what he did was because the sugar in the Twinkies affected him. Okay. Well, this guy here, a Florida man, again, accused of making $7 billion in fraudulent fraud transfers, told the court he stole the money because Jesus wanted him to be wealthy.
Which is true.
Yeah, probably true. Probably, depending on your religion, probably true. So they arrested him, and he allegedly set up wire transfers from in December and claimed to be a large, nationally renowned financial institution. He was unemployed, right? So he alleged a scheme by doing, you know, backgrounding number, did all this thing, but $7 billion. Do you think his defense is going to work? The Jesus defense? Jesus was unavailable for comment. Jesus could not make a comment.
He was unavailable?
Yeah, he was unavailable.
I'll text him now and see.
Florida's crazy, isn't it? Is it a judge and jury?
$7 billion. That's more than I make in a year.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Wait. Jesus.
It's incredible.
I don't think his defense is going to work. I mean,
unless you just have a real Bible thumping jury and judge, but yeah, that's, I mean, stranger things have happened.
That is Florida, though.
Yeah. Florida's a crazy state.
Florida's the craziest rogue.
It is the craziest place in the world.
Where do you think the hottest girls in the United States are? Do you think it's Los Angeles or Miami?
I think per square block, Miami.
Miami.
I think they're spread out more in L.A., and every hot girl from every high school moves to L.A. to make it, so they're always coming in. But my personal taste is I like Latinas with big booties, and man, that's it, bro. It's Miami per square block. It's it's overwhelming.
It's butter skin and dark hair.
It's Vegas on the beach. It's just crazy.
And
where are the hottest guys?
Montreal.
Ooh.
Montreal's got beautiful women too.
Montreal doesn't only have beautiful women. Beautiful women without attitude.
Yeah, it's real.
It's incredible.
Canada's really amazing.
I've never met a rude Canadian. I met a lot of inebriated ones, but I've never really met a rude Canadian.
So nice.
They're so nice. Crazy. It's incredible.
It was weird. I just did some shows in Vancouver. And it's just like the attitude was just so different. It was so laid back and it was so polite. And it was like, I don't know.
They have a utopian society up there. It's really, they figured it out. Just their healthcare and just everything, just their mentality. It's a trip. I've lived up there a lot over the years and doing movies and stuff, and I just love it up there.
Well, is Vancouver still a hot spot for filming?
Not as much, but it is, yeah.
Because I remember it was for quite a while.
I'm filming in the summer there.
Yeah. It used to be a lot more, but it's still a great town. Now it's moved a lot to the south, like Georgia and Louisiana. They just get a good rate and they want to keep it in the States more, but it's still up there.
People still fuck with the Couve, though.
You talk about what?
The Couve. That's what I call Vancouver.
Oh, the Couve.
You talk about where the pretty girls are. If you suffer from a little bit of, or pleasurably suffer from a little bit of Asian fever, you're going to have a lot of fun in Vancouver.
I don't suffer from that.
Very diverse there.
I mean, I've just, diverse. It's just,
you're strictly Latino.
More so, yeah. I don't know. I haven't.
You like that Enfuego personality? Because, you know, there's a lot of fire going on there.
I know, man.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I'm tired of fucking. I'm so over it. I'm just like so old. I jerked off twice yesterday.
Was it more pleasurable?
Bored with myself and disappointed. And just,
yeah, that's just how it goes.
Maybe you need some more spank bank material. Maybe you've kind of worn out.
I know. Maybe I need to just open up my fucking brain and just start fucking dudes.
It's so fucked.
Well, Nick's got me at a loss for words right now, TJ. When does that happen? When does that happen?
First time in 8 years.
Yeah. I'm actually at a loss for words.
It's time.
It's time to not be able to say anything. What the heck's going on here?
I have that effect on people.
That's a good effect.
You're hot and bothered.
Hot and bothered. By the way, last week we talked about the Adolf Hitler phone that's being sold, right? An auction.
What do you mean?
Adolf Hitler's phone. The red phone. Literally like a movie. The red phone on his desk, which he used and put many, many millions of people, you know, to death and, you know, all that horrific stuff that he did, the orders he gave. They found this phone, right? And the buyer, who stayed secret, they auctioned it off. Bidding started at $100,000. Soviet soldiers gave it to a British officer after the war as a souvenir, after Germany surrendered. And then it was sold once, and it just sold again. How much do you think it sold for? Just a phone.
$320,000 US.
$2 million.
A little over. $243,000. Which is still a lot of money.
Oh, that phone better suck your dick for that.
200. collectibles.
What apps were on it?
Yeah. Collectibles from World War II are like some of the highest priced collectibles around. It's crazy. It's
was
like,
he on Tinder?
I don't know. Is that where you're going now? Is that your next step? Since you've got to figure out a new way to get your pleasure?
No. No, I can't. Like,
I've
never
done the Tinder thing.
I can't have sex with strangers.
Yeah, that's another thing about being famous, quote unquote, is that you got to assume the worst in people and that people are out to get something from you. But it's true. It's almost like it sounds terrible to make this complaint, but it's like going fishing and the fish just jump in the boat. Like, you actually want the hunt as a man. You want that, you know. It's to the point now where I want a girl, it's so backwards, that has no idea who I am and hates who Dirt Nasty would be. Not some girls like, I love Dirt Nasty. I'm like, you're an awful human being.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want you in my bed or near me or at a dinner. You know, so
and
it
also
becomes
waking up next to a stranger is just the fucking worst.
Oh, my God.
It's like just fucking
feet
calm.
Look like a falcon.
You know how you fix that, though?
Murder,
just
murder.
Uber. Just ask him.
Uber's
to
a
Uber.
Lifesaver,
Uber's
man.
A lifesaver.
Uber is a fucking
Fuck the Uber driver?
No. It's real simple. Listen, you don't have to drive to see me. I'm going to send you an Uber. You come over.
Yeah, it's worth the $40.
By the way, I got an early start. I got an early call in the morning. And you've had your fun. Everything's cool. And say, honey, I got to get some sleep. I'm going to do something special. Have the Uber pick you up and take you home because I don't want you to have to get up early with me.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's Uber's
great. Is that working?
Uber is great.
Yep. It can work.
Uber changed
Uber
everything.
Uber is the shit.
Or you can be like Charlie Sheen and pay him to leave.
I love that quote. Right.
Isn't that a great quote?
Yeah, it's very.
Yep, there's so many different scenarios. But getting back to what you said,
yeah,
and I experienced this too, because I've even commented on the show that my dating life has actually, I believe me, don't cry for me. I have a great time. I'm still single, but at the same time,
good for
it's
you.
It's less, well, stay single, your pockets will jingle. But it stays
with your dick.
But you got to be careful.
Oh, man.
Girls, women, whatever the category they fall into, there are females. And I'm assuming maybe some males, too, that want to get you in a fist fight. But there are people on a mission today to make money easy. And we cover this, like, in the lawsuits we go through on the show. Some of these lawsuits that come up, people trying to rip people off, celebrities or otherwise.
Yeah.
You're a target. You're just a target.
A target.
You can't. You got to assume the worst in people, which sucks, you know?
I don't go to strip clubs.
Yeah, I don't want to pay some girl's cell phone bill.
No, I'm not fucking.
I wake up with a boner for free. I don't want to pay for one.
Well, you know what? At least you're still waking up.
I know, it's crazy, man.
To be happy about that.
42, I feel 23. I'm so fucking
40,
horny.
You still waking up with one, Nick?
Yeah, I fucking jerked off twice yesterday.
I suffer from POD.
Fucking miserable.
I suffer from POD, post-orgasm disgust. As soon as I'm done, it's like, you know, when you on Pornhub and you rub one out, you can just hit end and you're like, what was I thinking? It's disgusting. But a minute ago, you're all into it. And that applies to humans as well. It's very rare that after you're finished having sex, you really want to hang out with them. And, you know,
I don't even fucking come anymore. It just comes out like fucking just tired glue.
It falls out.
No,
like
you know,
your ghost
falls
dick.
Out of your fucking dick.
And you ever see the old cartoon, you know, with the volcano and it's going like this, it's going like this. And all of a sudden it erupts and it goes.
Yeah.
Is that what is going on?
Literally.
Whoa, that's age.
It just dribbles out like a fucking sad.
Yeah, it's a sad ghost.
Ian, I think we need some TRT therapy over here for Nick Swarson. What do you think?
Hey, I've lost my fucking balls too. I'm in a relationship, so I don't know what the fuck's wrong with me.
It's a different story. Folks, we're talking to the.
Don't any
Ian McCall, my friends. We have Ian McCall in studio. Ian, I just got a segue here for a second, and I even text TJ. I was so sad and upset at when you didn't come out for your last fight. I even told TJ at the show before, I go,
I am praying
that Ian's fight's going to happen. Five times in a row his fights have been called
You're
off.
You're a fun fighter to watch. Really? I did your podcast. I did his podcast a couple years back with your boy. Really? You're fun to watch, man.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Stay strong, Ian. It's, you know, you're a warrior, man. There's no question. Guys, I really love having you on the show. Is there anything else you want to promote? We got podcasts. You got any websites, anything? Let them know.
We're good. I'll just say at Nick Swartzen on Twitter and at Real Nick Swartzen on Instagram. Come to a live show.
Typical Rick.
And Typical Rick.
I'm at SimonRex415 on Instagram and SimonRex on Twitter.
That's awesome. And again, my offering to you, because I do the special recordings from BruceBuckler.com,
is
there for you. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That's really cool.
Can I make one more?
Yeah.
Because Russell Peters is a good friend of mine. I've opened up for him.
Russell.
He's funny as heck. I've opened up for him at the Comedy Store. When you're at the Comedy Store, because I used to live at the Comedy Store. I mean, I swear to God, I was my
it's
Friday
night.
The
best nights, place to be.
It's the best date.
Therapy. If, oh my God, it's a great date.
If you want to get lucky at the end of the date, let the comedians do the work.
Totally.
It's incredible.
You're so right. You're so right.
So right. It's awesome.
You just got to sit back and laugh and have a drink.
Exactly.
Just laugh, exactly. Have a drink, and then you laugh into their asshole.
Yeah, right? Just laugh on their tits.
There's one thing women love more than anything else, and I challenge anybody to argue with me on this. It's called a sense of humor.
Oh, man.
They love to laugh.
Man.
Yeah, for
make
sure.
Make them laugh. You know, like the old Singing in the Rain. Make them laugh.
Yeah. Make them laugh.
Exactly. Now, when you're next up, stand up. Either way, you guys, together, hit me up.
I'll text you.
Yeah.
Awesome. I want to see the show, and if you like me to, I'll come out and give you the bounce at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, 100% I would do that.
Yeah, totally
awesome.
Do it.
Awesome.
Fuck
this
yeah.
This is awesome.
Thank you.
I thank you so much for being on the show. You know, Simon, all the best
thank
to you.
Thank you so
sincerely.
Much. Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Thank
you
so much.
Appreciate it. You're a good man.
Bruce, great to see you. Love you, bud.
Love you too, brother.
He's
sincerely.
A man. Yes. Thanks for having us.
My pleasure. My pleasure. All right, everybody. Check us all out next week. We'll be back with another exciting show of It's Time Radio. Before then, now and forever, be respectful to everybody around you. Be a role model to your sphere of influence. Be honest. Be strong. Do not lie. Tell it the way it is. Life is karmic. It all comes back to you. Set your goals. Write them down. Be prepared to win, because life is about winning. And why? It's time to win. That's what we talk about on It's Time Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Buffer out.
The preceding podcast was a TJ DeSantis production. Comments, questions, and inquiries can be directed to desantisprod@gmail.com.
The world has changed, and Microsoft Teams is there to help us stay connected. Teams is the safe and secure way to chat, meet, call, and collaborate. To learn more, visit microsoft.com/teams.